You can congratulate them on the conclusion of the service, and thanks to Kevin and Ann, some family here with them to be a part of this. As I said, it is not a segment into which we keep on worshiping, but it is a part and an act of worship. And in dealing with some of these questions, I think it's important to just say also that as we made promises too as a congregation to Luke's faith, and we, if you had your child baptized here at Grace Church, then promises were made to you as well. So this Asked and Answered series is really trying to fulfill some of that, because I don't think Luke right now is going to be struggling with the question of God versus science, but at some point in his life, he's going to have to figure this out. And maybe you've never struggled with how God and science and how my faith in science kind of go in hand and how they interact and things like that. But there's lots of people today who are struggling with that. Part of what I think is our responsibility to our children, to people and our kids who become a part of this covenant community. And I want to emphasize that, because if you read throughout the Old Testament, and I'm already off track of what I'm supposed to say right now, so I'm sorry. But the covenant community was an important part of their life, because there were blessings as being a part of that covenant. And I believe that that holds true into the new covenant, New Testament as well. There are blessings as being a part of this covenant community. One of those blessings, I think, is this, is being with a community that is a group of people. When I say the church, that's all of us who help each other figure this stuff out in life. And so when we send our children out there into the world, they're not trying to figure out some of those big questions of meaning in life and purpose in life and why am I even here and what's my life all about? What's it for? Questions today that many kids are struggling with. I've had conversations with middle schoolers in my office dealing with some of these questions. Questions about purpose and meaning and why we're even here. And so as part of this covenant community, that's all of us, Grace Church, we're trying to create space in which we can do this together. And so that's what this series is really about, this Asked and Answered series. As I said when I was talking about the trustworthiness of the Bible, this is not meant to say case closed, that's it. All that's been needed to be said is said. This is simply beginning a conversation that maybe you want to have with somebody here, with me, or with a friend. So I am by no means a scientist of any kind. And so when I talk about this morning the question of God versus science, I am painting very large brushstrokes of how we're going to tackle this. I want to just set something up for us. I'm going to set it up, and then Vince is going to come up with me again, and we're going to sit up here, and we're going to answer some questions, give you an opportunity to ask some questions as well if you have any. Again, we're talking about God versus science, and I am not a scientist, so I can't answer some of the nuances about science, but we can at least have a conversation about it. But I want to address a couple things before we do that with this question or this statement, God versus science. And I want to tell you that we shouldn't think about God and science in those terms. It isn't God versus science. And it seems to me today, and this is my opinion, the narrative seems to be either you choose faith in God or you choose science, because the two are not compatible. You cannot pursue and study science and have a vibrant, real, personal faith in a God or the God of the Bible specifically. And I want to suggest to you that that is a myth. That is a false narrative that is being spread around in our culture today to make us assume that entering into the field of science or going to college to study science means I somehow have to give up my faith. Or I just can't bring that into the equation. I can't let that impact my thinking on things. And I want to suggest that that is completely false. That it's not an either-or thing, that I either believe in God or I believe in science. But it's a both-and. I can believe in God and I can pursue, I can study science, I can be interested in science, I can believe in the science that is happening today, the research that is taking place, and still hold on firmly to my faith. And one of the reasons that I think this is a false narrative is because of what history tells us. And I like history. I know it bores some people, but I like history. I read history books for fun. I listen to history podcasts for fun. That's what I enjoy, because I do think it teaches us something about the present as well. History doesn't begin the day you're born. History didn't begin just because you were born. There's a lot that has happened since then. There's a lot we can discover about it. One of the things I think history tells us about this is that for most of history, this wasn't an issue. That God and science were not opposed to one another, but they were actually compatible. So I want to use a person as an example of this. This guy, anybody have an idea? Now I'm looking for a scientist. He's kind of a good-looking guy for early, you know. I don't want to give you the time frame, though. Anybody have a guess who this guy is? He's a famous scientist. What? Isaac Newton, thank you. This is Sir Isaac Newton. So how many of you have heard of Sir Isaac Newton? Some of you. Okay, that's good. What's the story behind Sir Isaac Newton? What did he discover? Gravity. And how did he discover that? What's the story? What? Yeah, an apple hit him on the head. That's how, you know, he discovered gravity. It hits him on the head. He's like, oh, gravity. Awesome. So Sir Isaac Newton published this. I didn't read it. And again, I am not smart. I am painting this in broad brushstrokes because I am a simple guy. I know there's lots of nuances to science and research and discoveries and things like that. I am just trying to just give you some framework to build upon of why I think that science and God are not opposed to one another. So Isaac Newton, we've all heard about him. We've all been taught about him. Wrote this book. Wrote much, much more that kind of standardized or gave us the foundation of mechanics. And it was Sir Isaac Newton's studies that helped us put a guy on the moon. It was his studies, work that he had done back in the 1600s, that helped us discover what it is we have been discovering ever since. He is considered to be either the father or one of the fathers of the scientific revolution that took place. You know, that the not everything revolves around the earth. We know that now. The earth isn't flat. We know that now. All this stuff is happening. And Sir Isaac Newton discovered many things. He was a mathematician, astronomer, author, and physicist. But he was also a theologian. He discovered the laws of motion and universal gravitation, things that we have built upon today. And Isaac Newton, when he discovered this stuff, I mean, we know how gravity works. That's what he was doing. What is gravity? We don't have an explanation of what gravity is necessarily. It's how it works. We can determine things on mechanism, how they work. And so we were able to use math somehow to land guys on the moon. So Sir Isaac Newton is the person that we built so much of this on. He was a theologian. His discoveries did not shake his faith. He didn't say, well, look at these amazing things. My faith in God is meaningless. I don't need it anymore because I know how it all works. That's not what he said. In fact, many scientists, whether it's Sir Isaac Newton, Galileo, Robert Boyle, Sir Francis Bacon, all these, you can do a Google search of Christians, scientists who are Christians, and they'll bring you a list of people throughout the centuries who have professed faith in Christianity and were major scientists. For them, science was not incompatible with their belief in God. In fact, it helped them believe and know about God even more than they had at another time. It helped them say, this universe is knowable and this God has made it so. They didn't stop believing in God because of this. They didn't think that their belief in God was opposed to their great scientific discoveries. They believed that it helped them discover it even more and appreciate this God in which created it all. So I want to say that this idea that God versus science and you've got to choose between the two is newer. Newer in the sense that it's only hundreds of years old. We're talking about probably most prominently with Charles Darwin's famous book, Origin of the Species and Natural Selection. I mean, we're only going back in the 1800s now, where we are starting to assume that science can answer all questions about life and that we no longer need God. Yet most of history, I would suggest to you, teaches us that many of these scientists, it was their belief in God that pushed them even further to make some of these discoveries. And some of them, though maybe they weren't orthodox Christians, they didn't have a vibrant faith in Jesus Christ, many of these other scientists believed in theism, which is someone, something out there, a person, there had to be a mind behind all this. For most of history, that is what people believed. Theology and science were not separated. They were taught in the same universities and by some of the same professors. So this idea, this narrative, I think is a false one. It isn't either or. It can be a both end. And I hope that's a freeing thing if you enjoy science, if you like science, if you know people who do. It's simply a matter of investigating. So another thing I want to say before I invite Vince up here is we think, or our people say, that God was for filling in gaps. So I have a picture of thunder and lightning up here. So before we knew scientifically how thunder and lightning worked and could explain all that, you know, it's believed that everybody just thought, well, you know, that was the gods. It thundered, there's lightning, that's the gods. The gods are angry, the gods ate a spicy bowl of chili, whatever it was, the gods, well, I don't know what it is, so it's the gods. Well, how does this work? I don't know, it must be the gods, or it must be God. It's kind of filling in the gaps of what we can't explain. And the more that scientific research developed and the more that we can explain, it's believed that science has answered all those questions. We can explain everything now. You can go on Google. You don't even have to be a scientist and just ask the question and Google can explain it to you and you believe it's true. Most people do. If it's on the internet, right, it's got to be true. I mean, they're not going to lie to us on the internet. So science, what science does do, and this is important as I asked Vince to come up to explain something that I think is crucial, that is very important for us to understand and people growing up to understand. Science answers a lot of questions on the how, mechanism, how something works. And again, there are nuances to this, and maybe you have an argument to these two things. But generally speaking, for the most part, science does not answer agency, the who. Science does not answer the why, or purpose. So just for an example, if I said to you, I'm going to explain to you how Microsoft Windows works. Most of us have used Microsoft Windows, right? Most of us have used that computer program. I'm going to explain to you how that works. Or what I would do is say, Steve, explain to all these people how Microsoft Windows works. If somebody explained it to you, would you walk out of here and say, well, I don't believe in Bill Gates anymore. I know how it all works. I don't believe in him anymore. No, you wouldn't say that, obviously. Because you look at this program, and it's way beyond anything I could do. I did horrible at computer programming in high school. So I say to myself, the person who made this must be really, really smart. So you wouldn't say Bill Gates doesn't exist. You'd say he's a really, really smart guy. So there's a who behind the how. And if you wanted to know why Bill Gates did this, you'd phone him up, right? You got his number, you call him and say, hey, Bill, why did you build this computer program? Why did you make it work the way that it works? You could ask the why. Science does a lot of things to explain the how, but we are still left with some unanswered questions with the who and the why. Believing solely in science doesn't answer some of this stuff. it gets us into a lot of the how, and there's a lot of scientific research that has taken place that is amazing. That's wonderful. So another example I want to give you before Vince and I start talking. How many of you, and I know I think we say this at Good News Club, how many of you, when the moon is full, it's like the kids go crazy? Like, if you're a school teacher, how many of you hate full moon? Because you think that the school, like the kids just somehow react to the moon. So did you know the word lunacy comes from lunar? At one time in history, people thought when somebody was a lunatic or they were crazy or mad or whatever, it had to do with the phase of the moon. So how many of you actually still believe that? I'm about to burst your bubble if you still think the moon. But I think that's why we think that about the kids and they're being crazy, and because that comes through history. But now that we know, lunacy, craziness, or at least mental illness doesn't come from the moon. It comes from biology or the brain chemistry or behavioral science. There's lots of science out there telling us that the moon doesn't cause it. So it's not like we don't believe the moon doesn't do anything, or it's not purposeful, or it's not worth anything. We didn't stop believing in the moon because of that. The moon does a lot of other things. But science can explain the moon. It can explain the orbit of the moon and the sun and all that kind of stuff. But there's some things it just can't explain. And we don't have to throw out everything simply because we have a scientific reason or definition or explanation for how things work. We still need the why. We still need the who. So I'm going to ask Vince to come up, and we're going to answer some questions. And I'm going to probably ask you to do question two first, I think. Some of these questions were distributed to me ahead of time. Throughout June, July, I was asking you to either submit them to me or put them in the thing. So the reason that we have these ahead of time is because you asked them. It's not Vince serving me up some softball so I can knock it out of the park. It's questions you've already asked.
And actually, one of them was just added last week to the list.
Yes, that's right.
But we started off last week on a lighter note, and we have visitors today, so you get to know the pastor a little bit better. We'll do the same thing today. Instead of word association, like we did last week, we'll do pick one or the other.
Okay.
Pick one or the other before we get to the questions. Football or baseball?
Football.
You know why? Why did he pick football? Who knows the answer? Why did Ted pick football? Because football means... That's correct, Fran. Soccer.
Thanks, Fran.
Man in the back. 10 points.
It's called the real football. If you didn't know that, that's what it's called, the real football.
Second, Jess is going to love this one, but you've got to be honest. Fishing or the beach?
Fishing.
Thank you. No hesitation. Jess gave thumbs up. Okay. Craft fairs or board games?
Board games.
Thank you. Seinfeld or The Office?
Seinfeld.
The Office or Parks and Recreation?
The Office.
Thank you.
Am I getting points for any of this?
No. Oh. Fran Armanis is winning with 10 points.
Oh.
Home gardening or a man cave?
I don't know. Will you think less of me if I say home gardening?
Yes.
Thanks, Jill.
Two left. Alaska or Hawaii?
I'm going to say Hawaii because I want to go there with my wife.
Okay, Jess. And finally, right into our theme, nature or nurture? Or both?
Both and. It's not an either or. I said that earlier. Mm-hmm. Thank you for bringing that question up so I can reiterate it. It's not an either or. It can be a both and.
Agree. So we'll start with the second one first.
Yeah, start with the second one because I want to...
Because we get a little bit more lighthearted with the first question, which we've moved to number two. Okay, number one, how do science and faith interact?
This is why I want to answer this question now, because I said this is extremely important for all of us, and certainly, as I said, for kids growing up today. One of the people that I like to listen to is, his name is Ravi Zacharias, International Ministries. He has speakers that go throughout the world talking in various colleges, universities, and they always do a question and answer session, kind of like this. And one of the most asked questions of college students is, what is my purpose? What is meaning? Do I have a purpose? Is there meaning in life? I've had a middle schooler, at least one, I'm thinking two conversations I've had in my office for somebody that is in middle school asking me that question, wondering whether their life has any purpose or meaning. It is a big topic that is out there, and I believe it relates directly to our question with regard to science, because science gives people a way to see the world. So here are four reasons why I think science strongly points to the existence of God. This is a worldview. Anybody ever hear that word, worldview? You have a lens in which you see the world, and it's through that lens you filter information that makes certain assumptions about life, makes you decide certain things, makes you behave a certain way. Your worldview does that. And some people, especially today, think science can be that worldview. Scientism is all you need. Science has all the answers. I think that is false. I think science and just answering questions about the world, about life, about us as human beings from a naturalistic framework, which means the only answers I need are from nature and material. I don't need any supernatural. I don't need any God. I don't need any spiritual stuff. I don't need any of that. But here's what the universe itself tells us. Now, this is from the Bible. I want to read this verse for you. It's in verse 19 of chapter 1 in the book of Romans. Paul is writing a letter to people in Rome. And in this letter, he says this phrase, "For since the creation of the world, God's invisible qualities," this is verse 20, "for since the creation of the world, God's invisible qualities, his eternal power and divine nature have been clearly seen, being understood from what has been made, so that people are without excuse." Now, we don't talk about this a whole lot in evangelicalism, but there's a lot of traditions out there that use the term natural law. Anybody ever hear the term natural law? That you can derive certain assumptions about life, about the world, from just looking at nature. And nature, as Sir Isaac Newton taught us, has certain laws. And the question is, what do those laws teach us? And for him, it taught him that there was a mind, a God behind creation. And so four things that point to God's existence. The universe has a beginning, the universe is knowable, the universe is regular, and the universe is finely tuned for life. Again, I am painting broad brushstrokes here. I'm just trying to give you some foundation to why I think science and God are not opposed, and why I believe if you discover and dig into science, you're going to come smack dab with the creator of the universe. So the universe has a beginning. For 10 points, does anybody know what Genesis 1:1 says? When you open up your Bible, you turn to Genesis chapter 1, verse 1, you're going to read, "In the beginning, God. In the beginning was God." So the Bible seems to suggest that there was a beginning to the universe. So let's throw the Bible out. Anybody ever hear of Stephen Hawking? Anybody ever hear the name Stephen Hawking? Do your arms work? Does anybody's arm work out there? Okay, some of you have. Thank you. They're starting the wave in the back now.
10 more points for Fran Armanese.
Stephen Hawking, he is passed now. He's no longer alive, but was believed to be one of the most brilliant men to ever live. He concluded, I can't remember the name of the book, you can look it up, that the universe had a beginning. That's what he believed. All of science points to the fact that the universe had to have a beginning. Now, his theory was that, and I didn't read his book. I'm just getting this off of other things that I read. I'm not smart enough to read that book. But basically, I'm going to boil down into the language I understand. Basically, gravity threw up, and now we have the world. That's kind of what happened. So, but he believed, whether you believe that or not, he believed that the universe had a beginning. So that's what we believe. So in the beginning was God. So science itself is beginning to point. It's sending pointers out to this creator. The universe is knowable. We can discover things. We can know things about the universe. Why is that true? Why could Sir Isaac Newton discover what he discovered? And look at what has happened in our lives as a result of that discovery. The universe is, science is meaningless if we couldn't discover things about the universe. Why is it knowable? Why is it made the way that it is? It's regular. How many of you woke up this morning worried about if gravity was going to be there when you got out of bed? And when you stepped down, you'd float away. Anybody? If you raise your hand, you have problems. We need to talk about something else. Yeah, you don't worry about that. Because the universe is regular. You can get up every morning, and all the things that you got to worry about in the morning, gravity is not one of them. Why? Why don't we have to worry about the regularity of the universe? I don't have to worry about if the Earth is going to get just a smidge closer to the sun and cook all of us, or just a smidge further away from the sun and freeze all of us. The Earth is regular and leads into that final discussion of it being finely tuned for life. Why is it made the way that it is? You can go into all the scientific reasons about it, of how fast the Earth is spinning, of how it's going around the sun. All these questions, of all the stuff we know about the universe, and this is the only universe we really know about. There is no hard evidence that there is any other universe. The one that we know about, this universe that we live in, why is this thing we call planet Earth finely tuned for life? The ozone layer, the carbon, the amount of carbon dioxide as opposed to oxygen, all that stuff that I don't know about. Why is it finely tuned for life? These are the why questions that science can tell us how much oxygen we need as opposed to carbon dioxide, that science can tell us how fast the Earth is spinning and all that kind of stuff, but why is it finely tuned for life? So the first statement, the universe has a beginning, has three options. You basically have three options. Either God created it, or if you're a theist, either some being that is super intelligent created it. We have what we call the Big Bang Theory, that it all exploded at some point billions of years ago, and we have what we have now. And then you can add in the evolutionary theory and all that kind of stuff. But a giant explosion happened, and I'm just going to give you a statistic. I know there's nuances to that. Imagine that a tornado ripped through a town. And when the tornado got done going through the town, assembled for us was a perfect Boeing 747. How many of you think of that? That's possible? That's the probability of something exploding and you and I existing. Of all the intricately designed things in the universe, of us, of how the universe works, that's the probability. The other one is that the universe has infinitely existed, which according to Stephen Hawking is not true. There was a beginning. All of this stuff that I'm saying to you, this thing that we're doing, these slides, they're all going to be on Facebook. If you have questions about this stuff, if you want further information, I know there are nuances. I'm simply trying to start the conversation. There are lots of people who stop short of belief in God because of their science background. There are lots of people who maybe think twice about going into the science field because they're scared about losing their faith. They're not opposed to one another. In fact, I would suggest the more science you do, the more pointers you're going to get to a creative God. And we didn't even talk about assigning meaning, the fact that you have value. A materialistic, a naturalist worldview cannot assign value to you as a human. You're simply matter. You exploded and you came into being and you're made of molecules and all kinds of different stuff, and that's all that you are. And naturalism says if you're not useful to society, then we don't need you. Science cannot assign meaning to your life. Science cannot differentiate between a moral good and a moral wrong, of something that is beautiful and something that is grotesque. Because that's all meaning. That's all being assigned in a different way. So here I want to just show you these three things. Last week I gave you some. These are simply resources. And there's tons of resources out there. The first one, Jesus Among Secular Gods, is dealing with what I'm talking about in a more philosophical way. It's not going into a lot of the hard science. It's trying to give you an argument of why, similar to why we believe God can exist because of the way the universe is created. Ravi Zacharias, I mentioned his name, Vince Vitale, who has a doctorate in philosophy from Oxford, is leading the Zacharias Institute in Atlanta, Georgia. They've written a number of books. This is one of them that I have on my shelf. And it's dealing with these kinds of things. The other one, Darwin's Doubt, is written by Stephen Meyer, a brilliant guy. I didn't read this book. I listened to a talk by Stephen Meyer. He was one of the guys behind Intelligent Design, that the attempt to try and say that evolutionary theory is not the only explanation for why we have the world we have, but there could be an intelligent designer. And he's not trying to bring in Christianity or anything into that conversation. He's simply trying to go off of science. If this is your thing, if this is your wheelhouse, if you like this kind of thing, then Stephen Meyer might be a way to go. The middle thing is by a guy named Dr. John Lennox. He is also a professor at Oxford, I think, or Cambridge, either of those two universities in England, scientist. That URL address, that website, is a talk that he gave, a two-series talk that he gave, dealing with this question. The question is God and science, and that's all he talks about. And from that link, there's multiple others. These are simply recommendations. If you are wrestling with this, if you've had doubts over some of this, I encourage you to look into some of these things. If you have a friend who always says, well, I don't believe in God because of this, this, and this, there is tons of research being done about science by people who believe in God, and it hasn't shaken their faith. And in fact, it's helped them to see that there is a divine creator behind all of this. So these are simply some resources that you can use. As I said, this will be on Facebook also.
You're pretty passionate about this. I mean, controllably, this is the quietest I've been with Ted in ever.
Your life.
Yeah. This, Jody, if you want me to be quiet, just sit me next to Pastor Ted. It's hard for me to be quiet, of course. But I mean, I was very, very serious, and it leads into a second question, which isn't nearly, you would find, as serious, but we find ourselves asking it. And you've heard this question before, and I don't know if you've heard it answered to your satisfaction. So I've actually added to the question. The question is, and your kids will ask this, well, what about the dinosaurs? What happened to the dinosaurs? So my precursor to that is, first of all, were they even referenced or mentioned in the Bible? And if not, why not? But what happened to them? So it's more of a three-part thing. Attack it any way you'd like to.
All right, I'll take each one 15-minute segments.
Okay.
I'm kidding. First, one of the things I want to say, too, is when you talk about, like, natural law, I gave you one verse out of the Bible that said something about that. But when we use the Bible, I talked about how to read the Bible 2 weeks ago. There's a lot of stuff the Bible doesn't say about life. There's a lot of stuff the Bible doesn't say about science. There's a lot of stuff the Bible doesn't say about anything. So when we're making an argument like this, or we're trying to answer a question, a science question, the fact that I don't need to go to the Bible doesn't mean that somehow we're not a Christian because we're not making a Bible reference to it. The Bible does talk about these creatures like a leviathan and things like that that we don't really have a good translation for. Mm-hmm. They think, I've seen pictures of them thinking it's like a woolly mammoth or something like that.
Yes.
But it does talk about these creatures. Now, it doesn't specifically say the T-Rex or the Brontosaurus or any of that stuff.
Names we've given them.
Right. So I don't have an issue with the Bible being true, even though it doesn't say, well, the T-Rex and Noah were hanging out one day. And so that doesn't bother me at all. I don't need that. The fact that we have fossil records says they were on Earth. You'd be stupid not to believe or at least say that dinosaurs existed. Of course they existed. We have the fossil record of that. So for me, and I think this is kind of where sometimes we get in trouble when we say everything has to go back to the Bible. I don't think it does. I don't think the laws of gravity have to go back to the Bible. I think they're true within nature itself, and that makes us ask why. Why is it that way? And that, to me, leads us to God without even referencing the Bible. So dinosaurs, again, not necessarily referenced there. We know they existed. We have their fossils. They found a lot of fossils in, again, I don't know this stuff. I just read it. I did prepping some of this. I'm not smart enough to know all this stuff. But there is a lot of fossils found in only a few countries. It's not everywhere in the world. And they're all found in this layer of rock that has a name. I don't know what it is. So many scientists believe that some kind of cataclysmic event happened that killed a lot of them all at the same time. So some of you have heard that maybe an asteroid did it. Some suggest that maybe a flood did it, which would be consistent with some of the ancient history we have about the world, which none of us know about. We're simply going off of what we've been told or what limited scientific research we can get from all of that. And so, there, number one, you need an explanation for that. So maybe your best explanation is a meteor that hit the Earth and killed all of them at the same time. And unfortunately, if that would have happened, scientists believe that there'd be so much like dust and all that other kind of stuff that life wouldn't be able to exist for like billions and billions and billions and billions of years. So I guess that's how they answer that question, that you and I are here, because it's been billions and billions and billions and billions of years since that has happened. The only problem with that is in 2005-ish, they discovered that when they opened up one of these bones, they found what looks like tissue. So that fossil cannot date back 65 million years, because that tissue cannot exist that long. Science research tells us that tissue. So now they got to come up with another reason of, okay, why are we finding fossils that dinosaurs exist, and why do they have tissue? Because if we believe they all existed 65 million years ago, and now we're finding this, the two don't fit together.
And I think that's part of the argument you'll hear from people on science only, that we can't explain it because new things are being discovered all the time, is, wait a second, here's what doesn't tie, Fred. Here's what doesn't tie, Ted. God created all things. He created the animals, and he created Adam and Eve at the same time or the day after, sort of a thing. Why can't we find human bones that are dated at the same time as the dinosaur bones? That's where I think people that are on that science side only have an argument. Mm-hmm. That's what they try to argue. Prove to me the 60 million or 3 billion year difference kind of a thing. So I don't think there's any too much of an argument about dinosaurs existing. It's what about human bones being as far back as the dinosaur bones, for example?
Yeah.
Why would there be such a lapse in God's creation theory? And I always say, and I'm just a novice, what's a day in God's life, in the time of God? God created time for us. It could have been a billion years before the next step was taken. 7 days on the seventh day, God rested. And that's just me as a novice. We don't know what the length of a day was in God's time when he created.
Yeah, and to that point, that's why this discovery of what would have been flesh or something is challenging to that theory of, well, we didn't find any human bones with dinosaur bones, so did they survive at the same time? Mm-hmm. But now we can't date dinosaurs all the way back to when we did, because we found this tissue in there, which they're struggling to have an answer for. So some cataclysmic event happened. We need an answer to that. As a person who believes in creation and the creation account and story, you could suggest that maybe a flood happened, and we have lots of flood stories, not just in the Bible, but throughout ancient history. Many peoples have a story about some kind of flood, cataclysmic flood. The other thing is that if dinosaurs aren't as old as what we're saying, why are they extinct? Well, there's a possibility if you look at the biblical record, if we're using the Bible as some ability to teach us about the world, we know that the climate changed over time. Like evolution change over time is not, that's not the argument about like somebody that believes God created the world isn't arguing whether or not evolution means change over time. Mm-hmm. We know that happens. We know things evolve over time, and we can see that the climate itself changed over time. If we're just going off of the human, how people lived and survived, life expectancy diminished over time. And so there is things that have happened within the climate that possibly couldn't sustain life for a dinosaur, but it's possible that dinosaurs went extinct because humans hunted dinosaurs. If humans and dinosaurs lived at the same time, just like at one time, you may or may not have known this, but we almost had no American bison on the planet Earth anymore because we just about killed all of them. And it wasn't because of some of the things that we do to stop and prevent extinction that they still survive. So the fact that an animal goes extinct doesn't necessarily mean we need some scientific thing to tell us that. It could mean that just like today, extinction happens because when I was a kid or when my dad was a kid growing up, you could go anywhere and hunt pheasant. Anybody ever hunt pheasant? You're lucky to find one anywhere. It's not that they're extinct, but most of them are on farms or something like that. So change over time, the environment that pheasants needed to grow and thrive and survive has changed. And now you're lucky to find one in a lot of Pennsylvania places where you used to see them. And so an argument for why dinosaurs no longer exist is that cataclysmic event. They're struggling to determine that they actually lived that long ago. It might be closer. And it's possible that, you know, humans hunted them and they were, they all died out.
Right, because the technology is changing, just like that thing you pointed out in 2005 in reference to now, the dating scheme is thrown up into the air completely. Wait a second, if there's tissue inside the bone, how can it last that long? It wasn't 65 million years. Understood. Is there a follow-up out there in reference to that one? Because we have one more question, a burning question that many people think, some ask, and some just scoff at. Okay, the next question is, yes, ma'am.
Yeah, that's exactly, I mean, maybe this stuff is like, I could care less about it, and that's fine, and some of you probably never even questioned this stuff. It's like, I never even thought about this. This wasn't even close to being an issue that was challenging my faith. There's a lot of people that it is, and that's what I want to suggest to you. And there's a lot of people, and Marty was saying about when she went to college and the struggle between putting all this together, meshing it together, and there's a lot of kids struggling with this, and that's why I'm saying if you don't even care about any of this stuff, there might be somebody in your life that does. There might be somebody in your life that is struggling with this. And I want to say there are places in which you can go to find information, because I completely agree, Marty. When you start discovering what is out there and truth is not some abstract body of knowledge. Truth, as Jesus has said, is a person. I am the way, the truth, and the life. If you want to discover this, I believe you will discover a God who created this world, who designed it so that life could exist, and not only exist but thrive, and who made it in such a way that he desires a relationship with us. And not only that, he broke into the world he created through his son, Jesus Christ. Science starts that conversation, and my hope is leads us into that second conversation, of believing in this God. And so maybe you came here today and you're a visitor and you're like, this guy's boring. That's okay. Science isn't for everybody. Some of you, you're interested in this. The point is, there are people wrestling with this, and I think we, the church, have to wrestle with it with them. I want to give you permission to wrestle with these questions and not feel like I'm a bad Christian if I ask this Or there's something wrong with me if I don't just believe this. I don't think that's true. You have permission to wrestle with these because I think that's what God wants us to do. He doesn't want us just to believe because we were told. He wants us to believe because he wants us to believe in who he is and accept him for who he is. And if we do that, then these things that shake our faith won't shake us because it's not because so-and-so told me. It's because I discovered it for myself in a safe place to do that. And I had permission to ask questions and to doubt and to wrestle with these things. And there's lots of ways in which you can do that, not just here when we're talking like this or just calling me. There's lots of information out there. There's lots of friends that you might have. And so I want to encourage you to do that, to wrestle with these questions, to have permission to do that as a Christian.
And that's a perfect ending, but we have one more question. So he has to be brief.
I'll come up with a new ending.
He has to be brief. And I've heard many people ask this question. And there are situations where you have something happen to you or someone that you respect says, this is what happened to me when I went into this house, or this is what happened to me when I went into that house, or this is what happened in my house. Here's the question. Do you believe in ghosts?
Only Casper. He was a ghost, was he? I don't know if I believe in ghosts. I would say, and the reason we were talking about this, but I shoved it into this discussion is because if you believe that there is something out there like that, you can't have a naturalistic worldview. You can't think there's only matter, stuff. It's only the stuff that I see, can taste and touch, mm-hmm. can do scientific experiments on that are real. If that's what you think, then this ghost question is out of the equation, or spirit question is out of the equation, because we're talking about something supernatural.
That's right.
It can't be explained through nature. It can't be explained through the five senses. It's supernatural. Something beyond explanation is happening, like miracles in the Bible. How can you explain them? Stuff like that. So I believe that there is a spiritual realm. I believe that we're spiritual beings. I disagree that we are just matter. You're just molecules, and whatever your body's made of, that's all you are. I don't think that. C.S. Lewis said that we don't have a soul. We are a soul that has a body. So we're more than just this stuff. If I pinch you, you're not just the stuff you're made of. I believe that's true. And I do believe there is a spiritual realm. Now, do I think that that's a ghost? You can disagree with me. This is just my own personal opinion. I don't think that there are ghosts, but I do believe that there is a spiritual realm with spiritual beings, and I believe there are beings who are good and beings who are evil. Mm-hmm. I had a guy that was in my seminary class, and I did a class in seminary on spiritual warfare. He was a pastor in Nigeria. He's now a pastor, I think, in the D.C. area. And he shared a story in that class. He gave, and everybody had to read the story, and we all had to talk about it and that kind of stuff. He was a pastor in a village in Nigeria, and he dealt with a lot of demonic oppression and a demonic presence in this village. And he is recounting stories that have personally happened to himself in this village. Like this tree that had like bees just came out of nowhere and practically killed him because of this witch doctor that was in the village that was had demonic powers. He was able to cure people somehow, and it was through these powers that he has. And maybe that's like crazy to you, like that doesn't exist in our Western world. That supernatural stuff is pretty much has been taken off the table in a lot of ways. And we're suffering from that because there's a lot of people that just having a scientific answer, it doesn't satisfy them. Mm-hmm. Because they still need purpose and meaning. There's something spiritual about our makeup. There's something more to us than just stuff. A lot of the world still believes that there is the supernatural out there. That they've actually witnessed, and this guy in my class witnessed healings. this person was healed before his very eyes. And he's also witnessed some demonic stuff happening. So I believe there is a spiritual realm. I think in the United States specifically, we tried to get rid of that, but it's starting to influence the culture again. Harry Potter, anybody hear that? You look at a lot of the shows on TV now, and one of the papers I had to write was about the occult, which is like the spiritual world, and how many movies and TV shows, and I listed 10, not very difficult, like 8 years ago, whenever I was in seminary, that the spiritual realm is starting to make it back into our thinking, our psyche. And so I think the question about ghosts is that. I don't think they are family members. I've heard discussions, again, in the spiritual warfare class of people going to a psychic and believing that their family member is talking with them. Mm-hmm. I disagree with that. I do believe that as a soul, as the scripture tells us, once we die, we're with God, and we go to that judgment. And I believe that that person is a demonic spirit imitating, yes, your family member, your loved one. And again, firsthand experience from people within my seminary class talking about this. One of the professors, his parents were into that. Now, his parents grew up in the 60s and 70s, but they were into psychics and tarot cards and all that kind of stuff. And he told us stories about this demonic presence that was there, that when they became Christians, they had to, you know, try and fight against. And I know that sounds weird to us, maybe. Maybe it sounds weird to you, but there is a spiritual realm, and it's real. Jesus dealt with it, and people today still deal with it.
And C.S. Lewis talked about it also, that the real war that's raging is a spiritual war. And we're in flesh at this point, but the war that's raging all around us, we can't see, that is a real battle, is the spiritual battle between, yeah, good and evil, between Lucifer and the legions of angels he took with him, and God, Son, and Holy Ghost, and the legions of angels that remain behind. But unfortunately, what we are seeing in reference to this subject, when it comes to utilizing these powers, it's normally from a satanic perspective, and now, as you talked about, it's being camouflaged as you can use it for good, even though you have to go through the evil channels. You can become a Satan worshiper and do good with that. It is unfortunately the way that you're seeing it. You're seeing witches portrayed in a very positive way, even though they might be using black magic, calling upon demons, calling upon. So it's unfortunately coming back into the Western world, in my opinion, but it's coming back through a sneaky, you know, Lucifer way of, well, you can use this for advancing yourself and helping others, but yeah, you've got to go through demons to do it. Mm-hmm. But it's not called that, but it's in sense of what it boils down to often, unfortunately. Thank you for answering that tough question. I know that we can keep going on that one, but we're over. My wife reminded me, Vince, the service is 10 till 11, not 10 to 11:30, like you said 2 weeks ago. And I know we started late today, but if it's okay with you, Pastor, I know we can hold these conversations and continue them in life group. We can hold them another time in church. But if it's okay with everyone and for everyone's benefit, I think maybe we should close.
That's an excellent suggestion. I said to Vince, all we got to do is keep telling him it's over at 11:30.
It's going to become the norm.
Yeah, that's going to become the norm. You all know that we never end on time, so we don't have to worry about that. But I do want to just close by saying, again, this is the beginning of a conversation. If you never had these conversations, that's okay. If you do, I hope this is helpful. Again, I'm not a scientist. I don't know all the ins and outs of that. You can ask Ryan Chisakis. He's the physics teacher at Schuylkill Haven. He knows everything. So just ask Ryan. All the tough questions you have for me, ask Ryan. But I hope that it was helpful in some way for you. Again, this stuff will be on Facebook. There is lots of material out there about it. And again, these questions are being asked out there in the culture. And as the church, we need to engage that. And this is one way that we can do that. And I hope that you'll do that too when you leave. So let's pray to close. God, we thank you for the way in which you have created this world. I'm thankful for the fact that you have made it known through creation itself of your existence, and that if we seek to discover that, investigate that, as lots of science does, we can come to see that there is a personal, real being behind it, a God who desires a relationship. So, Lord, as we have these conversations, as maybe we have friends who deal with this, maybe we ourselves as Christians struggle with this sometimes, I pray that we would have permission to investigate, to deal with any doubt that we have, and to discover the truth. Because when we do discover that, we'll run into who you are, your Son, Jesus Christ, and our lives will be transformed as a result of that. Lord, help us to engage the world around us with the truth that you have given us through your Son, Jesus. Amen.